koutou, I tēnei, ahi ahi, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Wallace Chapman with you. Today, writing in the conversation, Professor of International Law, Al Gillespie, writes that we should beware of employing untethered public anger or suspicion as a compliance tool. It's an interesting article, so Al is on to discuss that. High school principals worried about students who don't have access to the internet. They are calling for the government to fund internet home connections. The principal of James Cook High School in Manurewa from Auckland is on the panel to discuss that also. And a follow-up to yesterday's story on whether ridges on your deck go up or go down. There seems to be much disagreement still. And the big response to that overnight in the email, on the emails here. With me this afternoon, Sue Kedgley, Board Member for Consumer NZ and Capital Coast District Health Board. And, of course, a former Green Party MP. Sue, kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora, Wallace. Good to be here.
Nice to have you on. And Chris Finlayson, who is a former Attorney General and National Party Minister. Chris, nice to have you on as well.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And for our story of the day, Caitlin Cherry. Caitlin, hello.
Very apt story, I must say, today in this esteemed company.
Yes.
But yesterday on the panel, when you had Dear Panel, you talked about one of the letters you read was about somebody who'd met somebody quite famous and respected and ended up making a bit of a fool of themselves, which got me thinking because it's the sort of thing I think we've all experienced. And then I went to the gym today and the Black Caps were there and I didn't do anything stupid. However, it did remind me of the time I was once at my gym and the All Blacks were training there. And when the All Blacks were there, I was like, all these sort of people kept coming upstairs to see them. And I was like, I'm going to be really cool. I'm not going to look at them. I'm just going to let them do their own thing. I'm not going to make a fuss. So I just kept my head down, did my workout, and I walked across the room to get some water. And because I had my head down so much, I actually crashed right into Richie McCaw and whacked my head on his chest. Then looked up and I was like, oh, sorry. And then just scurried off. So my attempts to be completely inconspicuous failed miserably.
Did you say hi?
He spent no worries. But no worries. I wish I could have explained that I was trying to be all cool and aloof. So anyway, I did a bit of research and I've got a few other awkward celebrity encounters, such as a few years ago there was a period of about 2 months where I randomly ran into Whoopi Goldberg 3 times in various parts of New York. The first time she smiled at me, the second time she looked slightly confused, and the third time she looked slightly alarmed. Another one was I met Steve Carell and I wanted to be different and not ask him about The Office, so I decided to ask him what Minions were like on set, but I got nervous and accidentally asked, are Minions yellow in real life? Another one, and this is a really funny one. I met Prince William at a nightclub several years ago. After a few vodkas, I built up the confidence to say hi, but instead of saying hi, I panicked and said, your grandma's on my money. I have more, but I also believe that our panellists have a couple to supply.
Surely. Mm-hmm. Sue, you first.
Oh, I was going to suggest Chris first, but...
Oh, well, go on, Chris. No, let's just... Chris, jump in.
Well, I was listening to that very interesting contribution, and then I thought I was going to talk about meeting the Pope, but I was a bit intimidated by that. But then I thought of one better, and that was I was in the gym one day, and there was a black fern in there called Millie Lees, who I thought was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever laid eyes on. And so I summoned up the courage one day to go and say hello to her and said, that was a wonderful photo of you in the paper the other day. And she said, no, it wasn't. I wasn't in there. And so I ended up having an argument with her. And so it was talking about making a complete fool of myself in 3 minutes was that was probably the worst and most intimidating interaction I've had with anyone for a long time.
Gosh almighty. Very funny. Sue?
Well, I met Prince Charles and I was sort of trying to think of something to say. So I said, I admire your stand on in the environment and on genetic engineering and I often quote you in my speeches. And he looked at me, he sort of wrung his hands and said, oh, we do try. And that was all a bit pathetic. But yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a nice one here. When I was 16, I was a cabana girl at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. And one day during a concert, Leonardo DiCaprio was sitting in a lawn chair surrounded by four beautiful models. One of my jobs was to clear the trash. So I asked him if he was done with the salad bowl, and he handed it to me. I had so much trash in my arms that when I turned, my toe caught the edge of the sidewalk and I fell face first and the trash flew everywhere. And Leo turned around in slow motion, lowered his sunglasses and said in a low voice, are you okay?
Love to hear from the listeners if they have a celebrity encounter, awkward or otherwise. You can text us 2101. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. Just one from me that I had, was a gym encounter, and it was many years ago, and it was can't remember what gym it was, but there was a person, let's just say very short in stature, who was piling up his bench press plates, you know, about 20 kgs at a time, you know, four or five on either side. I just thought, good gracious me, this person is not going to lift that sort of weight. Being the extremely short person is. So I actually went over and I said, look, mate, do you need a hand? Precious McKenzie said no. Yeah, he just looked at me and just kind of waved me away. And then the whole gym proceeded to watch this person lift that extraordinary weight like they were feathers. It was really a moment in time. All right.
I've got one more for you.
Yes, please.
I was leaving a Starbucks in New York, and as I was heading for the door, I saw Chris Noth sitting at a table. Now, if you don't know who he is, he was Mr. Big in Sex and the City. He smiled as I walked by, and I got so flustered that I ran right into the door, spilled my coffee all over myself. Everyone stared, and I just opened the door and ran away. Which I think is the right thing to do.
It wouldn't have been black coffee at Starbucks. It would have been black water, because that's a disgusting institution.
Yeah,
what were you doing in there anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Wasn't me. I'm just reading these stories.
Yeah. Dealing with royalty or meeting royalty, that would be one that I would be, okay, what does one say? How do you start things off? Because as I understand, you can only initiate conversation. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I don't really bother too much about protocol, even around royalty. But I didn't want to say, is it your Royal Highness or something nonsensical like that? So I just didn't. I just avoided using the Prince or the Royal Highness. I think that's the only way around it. But I think you're supposed to curtsy. I'm not sure if you're supposed to curtsy to the Prince. I'm sure I didn't do that. So there is definitely a some sort of protocol.
Oh, come on, deep down you were smitten.
With Prince Charles? I don't think so.
Oh, Camilla was.
Horrified by his treatment of Diana, perhaps.
Yes. Hamish says, I worked at the White Heron when David Bowie was filming Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, and stayed there. I was a barman, so I had to check his room bar every day. I was a huge fan since 13, but we ended up only talking about the weather every day. 7 to 4, Caitlin, Cherry, thank you very much for that. We've got a bit of time now for our story of the day. Who shall it be first? Sue Kesley, you start.
Right, well, Wallace, I've been thinking about this article in the Herald today, which revealed that hundreds of our frontline workers, you know, who are working in quarantine hotels all around New Zealand, are still being paid the minimum wage of about $18.90 an hour. Now, normally, if you go into a high-risk occupation or situation, in most occupations, you get paid, you know, commensurately, you get paid sort of a hardship sort of money or a risk money. But in fact, in New Zealand, here we are, we're relying on these frontline workers to keep us safe, to protect us from the virus. And these are people, they put themselves, their families at risk every single day. And they are amongst the lowest paid workers in New Zealand. I mean, I think it's obscene. And in the Herald today, it talked about Tina Aitiare. I hope I'm not mispronouncing her name. She's worked for 19 years as a cleaner, and she's been paid 25 cents above the minimum wage. And these are people, they have to put on this elaborate, you know, protective clothing every day. At the end of the day, they've got to put all their clothing in a plastic bag and wash it separately. They've got to get themselves tested all the time. They're at risk of themselves and their families. And I think it's completely obscene that they are being paid the minimum wage. And I think it's, my point really is that the government needs to intervene and it needs to raise the wages of all these frontline workers. Okay. And we, the government, have contracts with all of these 32 quarantine facilities, these hotels. So why can't the government, I think they're renewing them next month, why can't they specify that every single frontline worker must be paid a living wage? In my view, it should be much higher than that. And also, we've got this great Matariki coming up, our holiday, our national day. Why don't we give all of our frontline workers quite a substantial Matariki bonus to acknowledge the incredible work they do and how they put themselves at risk every single day of their lives, and to recognise that it's obscene that they are being paid, they're amongst the lowest paid people workers in New Zealand.
Okay, do you want a quick response to that? Chris, seems only fair an acknowledgement of a fairly dangerous job, possibly dangerous job.
Oh yes, they do a fantastic job in the most extraordinary circumstances. Well, we are living in extraordinary times. I would have thought there was scope to do something nice for them.
Very good. All right, before you get into your I've been thinking, Chris, here is one for you. Martin says, I once met Chris Finlayson on the Inter-Islander and had an amazing conversation with him. So I don't know if you can recall that, Chris, but there is one for you.
Oh, someone remembered me.
How nice.
On the Inter-Islander, no
less. On the Inter-Islander, good
Lord. I've been thinking, Chris Finlayson.
Well, I'm, in comparison with Sue, just dreadfully frivolous. But I was just thinking, I think about a lot of things, but I was driving out to golf the other day listening to Grieg's Piano Concerto on Concert FM, and I drove into town for this a couple of hours ago listening to Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto, and it just made me realise how wonderful a taonga Concert FM is. And I hope that the management of Radio New Zealand has got over its tendency to destroy Concert FM and recognise what a fantastic institution it is.
Unfair. They were looking at options.
The other thing I was going to say is I think that listening to Radio New Zealand's Concert FM should be pretty well compulsory every morning because it is so good for people's attitudes. And I can't help thinking there's so much noise in the world today and many of the topics we're going to be talking about involve social media and people speaking out of turn and so on. And I just think that I just hope Radio New Zealand management and the directors realise that to interfere with Concert FM would be a dreadful thing to do.
All right, fair enough. Do you know that right about now you're missing the Debussy prelude to Act 1 from the Carmen Suite? So sorry about that, Chris.
I've got you instead.
Yeah. Great replacement. But here is one that we might want to... Because I was looking at their schedule, I thought, well, this is interesting. The Evening Classics at 7 includes Bach, Keyboard Concerto in G, played by one Trevor Pinnock. And Trevor Pinnock is an absolute masterclass of a harpsichordist, noted for his Brandenburgs, and it's well worth the listen. So there you go, a little plug from me. Quite a bit of feedback coming through regarding famous. I met Dr. Seuss in 1964, says Nigel. I kissed Andre Segovia in London after a guitar performance in 1978, says his. We have Chris Finlayson and Sue Kishley on the panel this afternoon. Stay with us, 4 to 5, right here.